The crowd that gathered that morning in the square mile of streets, yards, and parks surrounding Westminster Abbey was the largest that had ever been seen in Europe. 1 million Britons had come from all over the kingdom to witness the crowning of King George III and his bride, Princess Charlotte of Mecklenburg. Every house, inn, and tavern was jammed. People couldn't sleep for the shouting and singing, the ringing of church bells, and the hammering of scaffolds. From St. James's Park to the banks of the Thames, nobles and peasants, merchants and ploughmen, flower girls, jugglers, and piemen filled the streets in hopes of a glimpse of the royal procession. Such is the power of the British monarchy that a famous American scientist of the day might have likened the choir of the Abbey, with its ancient chair of St. Edward in which the king would be crowned, to a magnetic pole enforcing order on the field of humanity surrounding it. The hopes of a quarrelsome empire waited upon the young king. Even the elements of nature were moved. It had drizzled rain upon the city since Sunday, yet on Tuesday morning the sun dispersed the clouds and fog and shone throughout the day of the pageant, an omen inspiring the London Chronicle's bard to write, "Since then, great prince, it looks like heaven's decree, even to our sunshine we should owe to thee. Let this day represent thy future reign, clear after clouds and after storms serene." For the nobles, gentlemen, and ladies, bishops and choristers commanded to walk in the procession ahead of the king, and for those with engraved tickets that reserved places in Westminster Hall where the procession formed, there was a great deal to see. The splendor of the spectacle would exceed the expectations that had been building since the death of King George II, nearly a year before. Westminster Hall, cavernous beneath its hammer-beam oaken roof, had been emptied of all but the floor and steps of the King's Law Court that convened here. A new floor of planks had been laid from the north gate up the middle of the half-acre space to those steps, and covered with woven matting. Immense galleries had been erected on either side, up to the beams, three levels seating thousands of spectators. 52 chandeliers, each surmounted by an imperial crown of gold, were ready to light a post-coronation banquet with 1,000 candles. There were few Americans in London, fewer who could witness the coronation of their sovereign, and only one who was entitled to walk in the procession. He was William Franklin, the 31-year-old son of the famous American scientist Benjamin Franklin. The older Franklin sat on a plank in the packed gallery. He had purchased his place in the open market, where they were changing hands for 5 guineas or more, a working man's wage for a fortnight. Ben Franklin gazed down at the privileged ranks of bedecked, bedizened, and bejeweled humanity. Judges in scarlet robes, choir boys with scarlet mantles, heralds in tabards, and all the nobility in their robes of state, their coronets in their hands. And there, on the edge of that rainbow of heraldry, stood his son William, in his drab coat of broadcloth, his tricorn hat in his hand. Benjamin Franklin regarded this scene with that blend of intense curiosity and amusement that often animated his bright blue eyes. He was, by temperament and practice, an observer of life as much as an actor in the human drama, both critical and self-aware. William, his only son, a keen observer and student of manners himself, was more naturally a man of action, a confident frontier soldier, a man of law, a scientist in his own right, and, as his father's aide, a colonial advocate. Pennsylvania had sent father and son to England on a fateful mission. Proprietor Thomas Penn's refusal to pay taxes on his vast property had crippled defenses on the colony's western frontier. Success for the Franklins with Parliament would mean safety for their countrymen. Failure would mean more Indian raids, more massacres. Success depended upon their harmonious collaboration. It would also depend upon the grace of the new king.